Oh man. We need more.
We do need awesome. More. Hello, mm-hmm. everyone. I was just telling Amy before I hit the go live button that she is my first female guest. And I actually feel bad as like a woman dev. I'm like, I need to get the women goodness in here. But I've found that like my circle is very male dominated. I mean, I'm sure yours probably is as well. But long story short, we are here this morning, 99 Dev Problems. Very excited to chat with Amy and have my first female guest on, which is long overdue. And hear about all of her awesome work. So Amy, I would love for you to introduce yourself to the guests.
Yeah. So my name is Amy Dutton. I've been doing web design development for 24 years, which is Woo-hoo! Crazy. got started super young. But my background is design and moved into the development space, worked at an agency really young, studied something slightly different in college just because I figured I already know what I'm doing. And decided to stick with web design and development after I graduated. So I kind of bebopped around. I worked over on Music Row. So I'm in Nashville. So it's fun to name drop in conversations. Yeah. I've run my own agency for 7 years and now I'm working on open source. So I'm the lead maintainer on the Redwood JS core team.
Oh my gosh. So I have so many comments, but the comment that just will not leave my mind is like, there is no way you look so young. Like, 24 years is crazy. And I know in pre-show we talked about how you started really early, which I'd love to dive into, but like, wow, like you, I would not have guessed that at all.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. So I started when I'm 16, I'm 40 now. So that's how we got to 24.
That is so great. I turned 40 this year and I'm trying to be like, it's not happening. It's not a thing. Like, it's just, it doesn't matter. It's not going to take place. Yep.
Well, we're about the same. So I'm September, I turned 40.
So. Ooh, nice. I'm in March. Yep. So very, very close.
Look at that. Yep. So, but yeah, it's been fun to feel like in some ways I've grown up with the industry.
Yeah.
Same. Because like when I started, it was just like regular HTML and CSS, like CSS2 came out when I was in college. And I remember being like, oh, this is crazy. You can do all these fancy things and look at it where it is now. It looks like a completely different
language. Oh my gosh, look at it where it is now. I remember like, you know, having to use various like workarounds to do what Flex and Grid can just so beautifully do today. And I was like, where were you when I was an early dev? And I couldn't figure out the basic fundamentals of how to center a div. Why was that so hard?
I know. Well, and just the nostalgia of it. We used to, you know, say we'd slice and dice a website because that's literally what we would do. We would bring that image into Fireworks, which RIP, and create a bunch of tables out of the images.
Yes. Do you want to know something funny about that? One of my first jobs, so I taught myself how to code like back in like, I mean, I did in high school and whatever, not as cool as you where you like actually had a job. Very cool. I taught myself how to like more in-depth code, I would say like 2006, 2007. And there was like nothing for resources. I mean, like nothing. It was so difficult. And so you were doing that, right? You were like stealing code from here, stealing code from there, parsing things together. Hello, Arvind, by the way, want to address that. Let's see. Are you not building 12 updates anymore? Oh, we're going to talk about that.
We'll talk about that.
I can't wait. Virtual birthday party. Like absolutely. Honestly. So virtual birthday party, I don't know about you, but, turning 40, right. You know, kind of like a, let's pretend it's not happening. It's either we can do that or we can just embrace it and be like, being old is great. We're mature and smart. Right. A dev friend of mine was like, you know what I'm going to do for my 40th birthday is like, he's just going to have a huge party, like host his own birthday party and just invite all of his friends. And I'm like, man, that's so great. But I'm like, how do you do that when all your friends are across the country? And I'm like, virtual birthday party.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. That sounds wonderful.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah. My daughter told me, she was like, Mom, this is another year of knowledge.
Like, oh my gosh, your daughter's amazing. How old is she?
She's 9.
That's how old my daughter is. Look at us. That is amazing. Yeah. Okay, so your daughter sounds like she's extra too, because mine is very much like extra and sees things and makes comments like that. And I'm like, oh, I see you. You will.
Both of them are. Aww. Both of them are. So I have a 10-year-old son, a 9-year-old daughter, and a 7-year-old daughter. So they're all right there.
I love that so much. Though, yeah, that is close together. 10 and 9. That is like, how was that in early childhood?
They're all a year and a half apart. So depending on when it is during the year, it sounds like two are closer together than the other, but they're all pretty much evenly spaced out. So even though I guess Isaac and Adele are closer in age, like by only a couple months maybe, than Adele and Emma. Adele, because of where their birthday falls in the year, Adele's in third grade right now and Emma's in second grade. So they're like right next to each other, which is kind of interesting now because they kind of share friends but fight over friends already. But when they were little, a lot of it was just being in survival mode. But, you know, the nice thing is they're all kind of in the same thing together. So they're, you know, all in elementary school together, doing the same thing together versus like me and my sister. My youngest sister and I are 7 years apart. So there's a big difference between like, oh, I'm in college and you're still in middle school.
Yeah, I have 16 and 14, and those two are boys, very close together, right? 2 years. They're like almost exactly 2 years apart. But we were like, that's all we were going to have. And then later we're like, should we have another one? And then we had a 9-year-old daughter. So there's like the 7-year gap between her and the youngest teenager. And then about 3 years ago, we were like, let's get a vasectomy. Let's be done with this. We know we're done. And then we're like, well, maybe like, let's just try one more time. If God wants us to have another baby, like it'll happen. Boom. Pregnant instantly. So now we also have a 2-year-old. We did lose the first one, but we lost it early. But now we knew we wanted it. Once we lost that first pregnancy, we're like, see, it's meant to be. So we tried again. And then now we have a 2-year-old. Mm-hmm. So I will tell you this. It is very, very nice to have them grouped together, but there is also sort of this beauty of having them spaced out as well, because like my 14-year-old loves the 2-year-old, my 16-year-old loves the 9-year-old, my 9-year-old's my only girl, otherwise I got a crew of boys. And it's just this beautiful sort of like little partnership with each other. So I can only imagine what your life was like in survival mode though. I was in survival mode with two under two or two under three, and you were like three under four. Dang. That's a lot.
But so my sister has ones pretty close to mine, my kids.
Oh, nice.
But she just had another one like in around Thanksgiving. So there's a little bit of a gap. Aww, and I know exactly what you're talking about, because it's beautiful seeing the older kids take care of the younger ones. And there's something special that they learn in that of just family and relationships and things like that. So I totally, there's beauty both ways.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. Like, I never wanted kids. This is a whole conversation, but I never wanted kids. I never wanted to get married originally. Then I met my husband and he softened my soul. But, now that we have them and now that I've gotten to this space, I'm like, I, for the last probably 5 or 6 years are like, I'm not wishing my life away, but I'm like, I can't wait to be a grandma. Like, cause it's like, it's just so beautiful. And so now my older kids previously were like, man, I don't know if we want kids. And they see their 2-year-old brother and both of them are like, well, maybe we'll have one kid. Maybe we'll have a couple kids. And I'm like, yes, grandmahood, here I come.
That's so funny. We talk all the time about what our names are going to be. So it's like a moving target, but we're like joking, meemaw and peepaw.
I love that. I love that. That's super fun. Okay. So, hey, Nick, also, so Arvind is asking, so I feel like we should dive into what, you know, well, let's dive into like, what are you doing in your day to day? Let's start there. And then Arvind can start to get his answers of what you're up to. So what does a day to day look like? You're obviously the lead maintainer on Redwood.js. Like, what does that look like? I think a lot of devs are probably very, I don't want to say envious, but also like, whoa, that's cool. So walk us through your day.
Mm-hmm. So let me just say, framework code writing is completely different than like normal code writing, because a lot of times you're working with things that are undocumented. So for example, we've been working on trying to implement RSCs into the framework for probably close to 2 years now, which sounds ridiculous, but there's just a lot of features with React that are undocumented, but not only React, but also Vite. And Vite just released like their version 6, which has environment frameworks, which makes a world of difference for what we're trying to do. But a lot of those things are undocumented. And I don't blame those teams, because a majority of the people are not using those features. They're just working with whatever the framework authors give them. So it's been up to us. And we've been in special working groups with those companies trying to get that work across the finish line. But it's just, it's hard and tedious work. So my job does not look like that. I am more on like, I'd say DevRel-ish. It's a small team. So a lot of stuff that I'm doing is more like demo projects or teaching people how to use Redwood or going to conferences or creating YouTube videos or doing podcasts and stuff like this. So a lot of my work is building projects, which is kind of where that Build 12 idea came from. It's like, okay, I have all these project ideas that I want to do. Instead of having to pick one, I'm just going to do all of them. And so that's where the Build 12 came from. Yeah. So it's ambitious. And I'm glad that you asked. It means a lot to me because it sounds like you're interested in the Build 12 project. I'm still working on it. So I mentioned this early in one of the updates, is that Thomas Frank, he tweeted about this, talking about build mode or cave mode and stage mode is what he called it. And so a lot of the updates that I did were at the beginning of the year when I was still on break from work because of the holidays, and now trying to juggle everything is really hard. And so I've been in build mode. I've just been heads down focused. And so trying to chat and talk about things is different. It's like, oh, I'm totally into this. I'm in the flow. I don't want to record a video to say this is what I'm doing. My original intention was to do more of that. And so I still want to figure out a way to find a better balance. But right now I'm feeling the pressure of the fact that there's 9 days left in the month and I've got to figure out how to deliver that project and get across the finish line. But there's, we can talk about this. I'll kind of let you drive the conversation. There's different parts of that that I think I've already learned within the first month, whether that's scope, whether that's creating packages and things that I can move from one project to the next, and trying to figure out better workflows along the way.
Yeah, I think definitely if there's more to share on that, like I would absolutely encourage you to dive into that, because I think that's the type of stuff that we want to hear about, right? Like, what are the challenges that you're facing, and like, how are you, you know, getting past those hurdles and challenges and things that, you know, maybe coping methods or different types of sort of process that you've brought into play to help you with those challenges.
Yeah. So I think that there's, and we can take the conversation different ways. So one of the things I did last year was I read this book by, I think, is it Julia Cameron? I think that's her name. But she wrote The Artist Way. Have you heard about this?
I have not. No.
Oh, you would love it. I think you would love it. It's really good. It's more of like a workbook. So you just read a chapter a week. I read it over the course of like probably the entire year. So I wasn't doing just a chapter. Oh, nice. There's 12 chapters. So you could crank through it in 3 months. But I just kind of took it very leisurely. But a lot of it has journal prompts and things like that. It's focused on helping artists, but it applies to anything. I'd say, you know, development, writing, whatever your craft is, but getting you unstuck. And I wouldn't say that I was stuck, but it helps you think through a lot of the problems that you have and kind of gives you different tools for doing that. So one of the things that she really encourages you to do is just to journal every day. I'm not great at doing that every single day, but it does help. Like, I'll write things and realize I didn't even realize that was a thing. And it's just on paper. It's in the back of my brain. There's something about long form writing it out that's a lot slower and more thoughtful than just typing it out. So I've always been a journaler, but really since having children, we were talking about that. That was one of the things that had kind of fallen off, but I really prioritized. And so there's several things like that, that I feel like I've set the foundation for over the last year to give me the tools, but also just the energy and the excitement and the motivation to do this project.
I love that. I definitely would really enjoy that. I used to also be a journaler as well. And I think the days where, I don't know if you've heard of the Ivy Lee method, but the, I was actually just on a podcast and we were talking about neurodivergency. So I'm like, I wanted to say I have ADHD, but I'm like, I might not, I might just be some other human brain. Cause we broke down a lot of stuff, but long story short, I have ADHD, or I've been diagnosed with ADHD. And so I started implementing what's called the Ivy Lee method. And the Ivy Lee method is this idea of making the six items you're going to get done each day. And so when you start your day, you prioritize that list, or maybe you did it the day before. And then when you end your day, right, you're like, oh, what's moving to the next day? And so each day you have these six items on your prioritized list. Hypothetically, I would love to stick to that, but it's something that I drop the ball on many days. But when I do sit there, I tend to actually write a little bit of like a journal. So when I sit down and make that list, it almost is like a brain dump of like, oh, but I'm thinking about this. I want to do this with my business marketing. I need to catch up with this person potentially. And it's just interesting, like truly getting back around to the journaling, like how well that when you just let it out, it really can help you sort of just work through that. Like you said, subconsciously not realizing that something is in the back of your mind bothering you.
Yeah, that's right. So that's been a huge thing. And I think, you know, just talking about different hurdles with this particular project is I'm having to approach it differently than I have the rest of my work. So
yeah,
previously working at an agency, you're creating this full-fledged application that an entire company has built their business around. And so you are trying to make it the best you can. You are trying to, in some cases, feature stuff because you know, that's what customers need or the client is asking for. And in this case, in order to deliver it and really just try and prove like whether this product would actually work or not, it's really about what's the core feature in the app. And that is so hard for me because I'm so good at scope. Well, scope seep. So I don't know if this is a real thing. I heard somebody talk about it, but scope creep is when a client will push stuff on you and ask for additional features. Scope seep is when you say, oh, wouldn't this be nice? Let's add this in here. And so really good at keeping those things in. And it's not the client's fault. It's my fault for saying, oh, wouldn't this be wonderful? So I'm just trying to hold that back and not let myself be my own worst enemy and get in the way of that.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I am like so guilty of that. Hey, Gladys, welcome. I think that is definitely, honestly, like, is there any developer that's good at that? Unless they're like type A that like doesn't let that seep come in, because how do you not when your brain is in that mindset and you're like, oh my gosh, this would be beautiful, because that's like our MO, right? Is solving problems. Mm-hmm. So, I'm definitely a scope seeper myself as well.
Yeah. Well, and it's another thing too, when like in this case, I am all the things. I am the project manager. I am the client. True. I am the developer. Whereas when you have an agency, that was always my kind of stopgap and protecting myself as I was working with a project manager that was able to say, that's a great idea. Let's stick it in the backlog. Or like the client didn't ask for that. So let's make sure that they're okay with that feature before you just stick it in there.
Yeah. So, no kidding.
It's a difference.
No kidding. Yeah, I agree. I think it is hard when we're thinking about our own projects. And I think sometimes also, and I don't know about you, but like when I'm trying to sort of just build something for fun or create something, but I want to put that code out into the world, I also have this level of like wanting it to be perfect, which is problematic. And so I think the seep comes into play a lot with that, because I'm like, well, even if this is for fun, like someone that could stumble upon this repo doesn't know that it was for fun, and I don't want them to judge my code skills, you know? Yes. And so it's easy to let that happen.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's the other beauty of the Build 12 thing. The fact that it's like, I have to deliver every single month. It kind of protects you from that level of perfectionism where you're like, I can't release it because I didn't add this thing in yet. It's like, no, I need to release it because I'm on a deadline.
Ooh, yeah. Okay. I love that. This sounds fun. Obviously there's been a little pressure with this, but like, do you want to share what you built this month? Do you want to dive into that a little bit, or you want to wait to unveil it until you're...
No, let's do it. So, and this is good because we can kind of bring in some of the framework conversations. So this month, my project is called the part-time startup. And the idea with this is when we did the Redwood conference a year ago, September, it was one of my most favorite conferences because it was really centered around founders. I mean, obviously a lot of people that love Redwood came to the conference, but the things that we helped them with were marketing or business related. Ooh. So first day that we had people there, we did like this mastermind workshop where you had to pay extra money to be a part of it, but startups would come in and they would talk to the Redwood team. And let me just, I guess, also add like Tom Preston Warner, who started GitHub, was part of that panel. So he has a venture capital company that he invests in other companies and startups and things like that. So it's not just like a framework team being like, oh, this is what I think. It's like, no, these people have experience in business and marketing, and we're going to help speak into companies that are using the framework that we're building. But what was interesting to me about this workshop was that everybody that needed help did not need help on coding problems, did not need help on execution. It wasn't like, I'm trying to figure out why this, you know, how to loop over an array. It was none of that stuff. It was, I'm trying to find product market fit. I'm trying to figure out how to price my application. I'm trying to figure out what customers I need to talk to in order to get feedback. And so there's so much more that goes into building an application beyond just the development. And so part of the part-time startup is to help create a community for people that are trying to build startups that need expertise from all those other fields. So the thing that I'm building right now is the platform, and then that will launch and hopefully have other developers that are trying to build things come in. I'll do hot seats and do interviews and things like that and bring people on. So I'm really excited about the community, and I'm going to lock in the size of the community so that it stays nice and small and intimate, and we can really help each other. So I think I'm excited about the code and the project, but I'm more excited about the other side of that and the community that will come out of that particular project.
Oh, so my gosh.
It'll be fun.
That is so cool. So I am like extremely excited about this project, because that very much is my day to day, is that with my business in the beginning, it was like I was taking fractional DevRel work, and I pivoted to dev tools only, early stage dev tools only. I realized I can't pivot to only early stage dev tools because they don't have all the money in the world. So I am again pivoting a little bit to be able to do both, right? But I would say probably the last 3 to 6 months I've been hyper focused on technical founders, and that's exactly the problems. Like, we can get into it and we're like, you know, we're talking about tech and whatever else, and like, that's great. Those are problems they know how to solve, but they do not, like you said, know how to solve that product market fit. They don't know how to understand some of those pieces. You and I should probably chat offline, because I'm starting to build a tool that is more of a, like an AI tool. That will take the insights that I've learned from like these types of interviews, anonymized, of course, plus other developer conversations, other insights I get. I have developers doing feedback for companies constantly. That it's like constant flow of developer feedback, and creating that into essentially like an AI app that someone who is a technical founder could be like, how do I find my market fit? And like having very scripted sort of prompts to allow them to give them some insights. So long story short, sounds like you and I have some shared things here. Yes. So please bring me into that community. I'd love to help as much as I can. Okay. Yeah. I love that so much. So do you want to talk about how you built it, the tech stack behind it? Yes. You tell me what you want to share.
Yes. Let's do it. So I'm going to take a step back. And it's always better when you have a story, right? You have some context. Ooh, so last April, I went to ReactConf and spoke at ReactConf. And while we were there, people started talking about Laravel and just trying to find that JavaScript of Laravel type thing. And I feel like that's something that's a very prevalent conversation within the JavaScript community. What's interesting, it's like we love our composability. We love the fact that we can plug and play with whatever we want. But at the same time, it makes certain decisions harder, right? Because you're thinking, oh, well, I could use Neon for my database. I could use Supabase for my database. And the problem with me is that a lot of times I'll start going down a certain path. I'll hit an edge and like, oh, like, yeah, Neon is fantastic, but I'm gonna have to do auth and storage. And so maybe I should just switch to Supabase and pull it all in. And it's like, okay, if you were building any application, you said, I'm going to change my entire database layer and do all these things, like that's a major shift in what you're building. And I know, you know, developers in the Rails world and the PHP world just look at us and like, you guys are crazy. We are. So part of this is, you know, as a framework maintainer, is trying to make sure I understand all the options that are available. And so if people are saying that Laravel is so great, I've been curious, like what is so great about Laravel? So I leveled up on Laravel last year. I was like, I'm going to build this on Laravel. And of course, like I hit an edge and I'm like, I'm going to switch over. I'm going to try a different framework. And so part of it has been like, I started building at Laravel and now I'm shifted over and I'm building this in Next right now.
Interesting.
And part of it is because with Redwood, we have been trying to implement RSCs and SSR and all these other pieces. And I feel like it's getting close, it's getting to a good point, but I just know over the next year, I am going to have to talk a lot about SSR, educating people on RSCs and trying to like, if Next is the only viable option right now, compare and contrast those things. So some of this has been like an education piece of it, trying to level up for work. But I also just miss my JavaScript. So anyways, I've moved over to Next. I'm all in on Next right now for this particular project. But I'm telling you, RSCs, I've been slightly skeptical just because it's been so hard for us to implement, but they really are great. They're pretty fantastic to get in. And, you know, I think that's the other piece for me is I can read tutorials, I can watch videos, but for me to really get the vibe of the framework and figure out how I feel about something, I have to build a project in it. That's when you start to hit the edges and understand, oh, this nesting database thing is really difficult, or trying to generate types on this is really hard. And so that kind of tends to go into that next piece. I don't know if you're ready for it, but just figuring out what parts of this project can I bring on to the next month? What are the things that I can do forward to make it easier? And we kind of snowball as the year goes on.
Yeah, I love that. Arvind had a comment that I threw up on the stream. Not sure if that's something you're open to or if this is a Amy sort of building only. Arvind's actually the person that told me that you were building this project.
So really?
Like, I gotta catch up with Amy. Yeah. So shout out to Arvind.
I was gonna say, Arvind, reach out to me. I'm self-teach me on most channels and we can talk. It's funny that you say that because I've had several people say like we want to jump in. And I've even had people say that it's like, what are you gonna do in month 11? And now you have 10 projects you're trying to maintain.
Yeah.
Which is a question I just put off and I was like, that's future Amy problem. But I've had people that, have said like, can we help you build a community or are there juniors that you can bring on and you can help educate to help with the maintenance side of things. So I haven't quite figured all that stuff out, but I have had people asking. So I take that if multiple people are asking, then there is something there.
There is definitely something there. I think that's the interesting thing, like, you know, coming back to like open source software, right? Like that's, you play a pivotal role in that of like, there is a whole entire program or sort of maintenance that needs to go into an open source project. Should you want it to actually be something that you're maintaining and you're continually working on? Of course you can be like, here's the repo, go touch it. I'm not updating it. I'm not doing anything to it. It was a one and done, beautiful, fun project. Mm-hmm. But I think naturally you're still going to have those developers go and find it, right? The, you know, Arvind or anyone else who is just really eager and excited about what you're building. So if you want to, no pressure, I'll just throw this out here. Like the Built for Devs Hub is very much, I'm trying to curate this. I'm trying to bring developers together so that they can do these types of things. There's different subset of so many features in the community platform that I've been able to graciously receive from Gradual, just a quick shout out to them. And so in that platform, which these streams go in that platform, but then there's also, we've had live events, we've got roundtable conversations, we've got one-on-one dev match introductions and things like that. So if you ever want to do something in there to, you know, bring together some developers or co-work, I'd love to host you in there. So I'm sure you have many other places too, but yeah. I was just talking about this, but I really think that I've actually talked about it everywhere. And it's been my theme for the last few weeks is like developers are so hungry to hang out with each other right now. And it's, I don't know if it's post COVID, if it's the job market, if it's, you know, sort of an antitrust kind of vibe that society sort of has right now, generally, you know, people trying to find their tribe. So long story short, whatever you end up doing, there are many developers I think would love to be involved because they're all just yearning for hanging out with their peers.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Definitely food for thought.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, your first project is already going to sort of have a bit of maintenance to it, right? If you're bringing together a community, we all know how difficult maintaining and growing and expanding and actually like having a community will operate. So have you thought about that or do you have sort of... Yeah. What's your, I don't know. Do you want to talk about that? Are you going to build the community or is that like a, we'll think about that later thing?
Both and. I've also thought about bringing on help. So have you done the strength finders? That's really interesting too.
The DISCS ones or like the.
No, this one is like Gallup. I think it's just called strength finders unless they change the name.
I mean, I've done like DISC. Motivation. Yeah. There's a bunch. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that stuff. Yeah, there's a bunch. So what's interesting about the whole Strength Finders philosophy is that, you know, sometimes you'll hear people say like, oh, you need to work on your weaknesses, you know, identify those and try and build them up. And Strength Finder says, no, that's dumb. You're already good at certain things. You're already inclined to certain things. So why not lean into that? That's your area of strength. Bring on somebody else that's good at the points that are your weakness and get them to fill in those gaps. So that's obviously not an excuse for bad communication or, you know, not being committed to things, but it does say like, these are the things that I know that I'm good at. And I feel like we were talking about being 40. That's something that I've heard in other people that are around that age where it's coming to terms with this is who I am and I'm okay with that.
Exactly. And
so I think for me, it's one of the things I love, the community aspect of it. I have a small Discord that I'm a part of that is like my favorite place on the internet because it's people that are active and, you know, rally around each other and support each other. And that's really what I want to build with what I'm doing. So it's, I love that side of it, but it's also understanding like if I can bring somebody on to help with the admin stuff, to help with support questions, that can send stuff out, that can't do the design work, that can't do the coding. Like, let's let them drive that piece of it. So I have been thinking about ways to bring people in that are naturally good at that stuff, that that is their strength, that allow them to focus on the things they're good at and allow me to focus on the things that I'm good at. So when you're talking about bringing on community people, that would definitely be an area where I would love help.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes tons of sense. Honestly, I love that very much because I've actually struggled with that in my business over the last year. And I wouldn't say struggled per se, but the struggle has been, I am good at certain things, right? And there are things I am not good at. And at this point in time in my career, I've been able to be like, oh, I'm not going to be a part of those things. Like, the execution of day-to-day minute little tasks are nearly impossible for me. And so it has to be like, okay, I'm going to get in my headspace. I'm going to start working on this thing. I'm going to get through the little minute tasks, but it's more of, I'm the strategist. I'm the ideation. I'm the like big picture, and very much strong on that side. And I just have found that I'm like, why is some of this work not working? Like, I had a few different service deliverables that were like me getting into the weeds and doing some of the DevRel. And I'm like, why are these clients so hard? And I've had to self-reflect and realize, ah, this is the work I should be outsourcing, right? It's like, I can be that beautiful strategy and bring in the right people to go and execute against that strategy. And it's, I don't know, it's hard to shift into some of that headspace, right? And it's hard for us to sort of identify these weaknesses. But gosh, when you can and do that, I think it's really empowering and can change everything, honestly.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of the next step that people struggle with. It's like one thing to identify it, but another thing to like publicly admit it, to say, I'm not good at like filling out contracts. Yes, they take 5 minutes, but they drain. They're so draining.
Proposals are mind draining thing in that way.
Like, why not just outsource that piece? Tell them this is what I want to do. I tell you what has made a world of difference to me is AI.
Same.
I'm like curious. Same. You know, as you're talking about getting feedback and using AI to do all this stuff, writing has always been hard for me. I'm a much better editor than I am a writer. But I tell you what, Claude and me can knock stuff out. It's fantastic. So I just love what AI has opened up in that regard.
Yeah, honestly, I agree. Like, especially when it comes to proposals, like, I think I'm starting to sort of find a rhythm and am getting to a place of like having a default proposal, and I'm going to strip out what doesn't. But with my different service pivots and trying to figure out what's sort of my rhythm and where do I want to kind of niche into, it's been hard. But like ChatGPT, so I love Claude and really loved Claude, but Claude's kind of on the fritz lately. I don't know if you've noticed that. So I actually started using ChatGPT, and like ChatGPT has been delivering for me a little bit better. But I will say, like, that is, I need to get past just that empty paper space. So like, I love writing. I love doing this stuff. I love like curating these things, but it's the like getting started. And so I'll be like, I need a proposal, and I record every single consult that I have. So I go through, anonymize it, bring that into mostly Claude because it's private and I'm in the private account and pro account. But I bring that in and I'm like, okay, let's run this, right? Like, what type of, what should be in that proposal? Like, someone in one of my live streams, I think it was a couple weeks ago, I can't remember who it was, but shout out to Joe Casabona. That's what it was. He told me about a sales life cycle add-in to ChatGPT, where you can essentially put your anonymized transcript in there and it'll summarize your entire sales conversation. So beautiful. Nice. So I agree. And that it's, my weaknesses are getting started sometimes in those types of things. And it's been able to get me started in those areas that, I previously struggled with.
I tell you what, the thing that made a difference for me with Claude is, so you can set up different projects, but I found like I would start a chat within the project and it's like, do you not know that we've already talked about this project 10 times?
Yes. But, yes. It's so annoying.
But so what I found out, I did a little bit of reading, and what it does is it references your project artifacts that you have, not just your individual chats. And so if you set up context for like a context document for that project, it will blow the water out of whatever chat you have. So for example, Compressed FM, it's a podcast that I co-host, and we have different artifacts or assets that we will generate with each episode. So that's chapter notes, it's a summary, it's social posts, audio clips, suggested blog posts, all these things. So I had previously set up a custom GPT where I just said to ChatGPT, hey, generate all these things. And it's great because you could just say, generate all the assets, and it would do it. but the quality wasn't stellar. So some of the things that I would say with the chapter, the notes or the summaries, I was like, I would never say that. And so I found out like Claude was giving me better results. Like it was talking more like I talk, or, you know, I could still edit things, but it was still like every episode that I'd start a new chat on, it was like, it never heard of Compressed FM. So finally what I did was I said, I was like, okay, I need to create a context document to add to the project. I'm not even sure what it needs. So I went to Claude and I said, hey, I want to create a context document for you for this project. What do you need to know to make this context document for you successful? And it asked me a bunch of questions. I just threw it all in there. And then you can say any artifact that Claude generates, you can click a button that says add to project. And it will add that markdown file to the project files. And so then anything else I asked it, it was like brilliant. Like I didn't have to explain all these things. It was able to deliver social media strategy. It's, you know, been really helpful anytime I've had other episode assets I need to generate for it, has some context for what the podcast is and who our audience is.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I use the project knowledge, and I also use the little prompting in Claude, right? Where you can sort of explain what are you trying to do, and it'll maintain that with your project. But I think the thing that I am missing is creating the context from each chat. So just like you said, right, is like, okay, what happened in that first chat or what happened in that second chat that got us to that progress, and then updating that project knowledge with the conversation results, which I think is where I'm sort of lacking. I honestly need to go back and like, I have some prompt templates. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say at the end, you can say, will you generate a summary of this conversation that I can add to the project documents? And it'll generate that summary for you that you can then add. So I've seen people use that too when they'll hit a limit in Claude. That's, I think, a big difference between Claude and what I've seen with ChatGPT is people are hitting limits. But you can get to the end of the conversation and say, hey, I need to move to another conversation. Will you summarize all the key points and kind of how we arrived at this so I can add it to the project or take it to the next conversation? And it'll generate that document for you.
Yeah, I need to start doing that. I honestly, like, I have some prompt templates and stuff for the work, like I was talking about with like the product market fit. And I actually have this whole like developer ecosystem report for early stage dev tool founders, which sort of compares and contrasts their features and opportunities to their competitors, but also shows them like, hey, you fit in the market right here. There is a gap in this space and you can come fit in here. And so I've started working towards those prompts, but it's like, that's the only space of efficiency I think I have. And so I need to spend more time investing in my sort of tool set and process in that way, I think, which has been so hard for me in business, because that's actually what I like to do is I like to have this whole beautiful system process. Everything is automated. Everything is what it's supposed to be. But because of like starting a new business with my executive coach, he's like, don't do that yet. You don't know what the process is yet. And so then I've gone almost this whole year not doing it. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, it's killing me. I'm like, I have to go back to process now, because now I am seeing a lot of norms. And so, it's been interesting. I think there's a lot to learn, and I've tried to follow some of the newsletters. I don't know if you have tips, but, I'd love to find someone who's just like using it like in this way and then communicating about it all the time. Like, this is my win, my win. I don't know, kind of guide us a little bit. I'm sure those exist, but I'd love to find those resources. So please share them with me if someone's hearing and they have them.
Well, and I was even thinking like some of the stuff that I've been working on, like I would like somebody to tell me did it.
Yes.
So, you know, when we're talking about that cave mode versus stage mode, I'm like, that's the stuff that I want to share. Like, this is the best way to generate marketing copy for a landing page. This is how I used AI to do it. I think that's super interesting. Or I did freaking full stack in October around Halloween. So I did a workshop where I taught people how to build a full stack application, called it freaking full stack, themed it for Halloween. It was really fun. But most of the assets that I used for that project were all generated by AI, whether that was the copy on the marketing page or the artwork or all of that stuff. I've just been blown away. I'm like, this is the future. But I also think you have to have that filter of being able to edit it. Because we'll go on the fritz sometimes.
I do agree. The longer conversation, the worse results you're going to get. I've definitely realized that. I think also too, it's like I found sort of the downfall, I think, that was hard for me last year was that as I was trying to grow my business, I was also like, okay, what am I not thinking about? Right. And I think that's what's hard about starting something new. Yeah. And so I would go to Claude and just be like, hey, if I was going to offer services, like I kind of dumped, like, here's what I'm good at. Here's what I've done. Dumped in some other resources, some content. And I was like, what services should I think about? And I think like, I allowed AI to sort of take me down a path. I was like, oh, this is good. And then I would get down it and like, I realized, I'm like, dude, I don't really want to be working on product market fit for like a mid-level established startup. Like that is, I'm not a marketer, you know, like, yes, I can do it. I get it. I understand developers. Yeah. And so I found myself almost like offering and doing some services that like felt so accurate and so right for clients. And sure, they were great results, but I was like, this is not what I love doing. So I will say there is also sort of a negative of AI where I feel like if you're using it in like open green space, it can definitely guide you. And I'm not saying it was like, it guided everything, but it sort of slowed me down almost in some ways, and then had to kind of step back and be like, okay, no, I can't use it for all the things. Like, how do I take who I am and what I want to do and harness it more into how does that convert into the right services? How does that convert into the right work and deliverables and things? So AI is.
Well, and I'm convinced more than ever that the stuff that we bring to the table is what is going to elevate it, because you have AI stuff, which is good, but it's like everybody has that AI layer. And so it's like, what are people interested above and beyond that? And that's you. That's what you have to bring to the table. It's your experiences and the knowledge that you have. And that's your competitive advantage that nobody else can offer.
Boom. I agree with that. I love that too. I know there's many people, like Aaron Francis is like a really good advocate of like sharing what you learned. Yeah. Quite a few folks, right? Like Compressed FM, you guys talk about a lot about this too. And just sort of sharing what you learn, all sort of topics. But I think that's really the essence. And, you know, like with many conversations, I've talked to a lot of developers through the show and otherwise, and there's is AI taking our jobs? And it's a hot topic. And I think it's like the big essence that has come out of from everyone is like, it can never be human. It can never be you and have what you have experienced and gone through and what your brain knows and what you can do as like a human to take something that's computerized and make it effective for other humans. Mm-hmm. So I think that is, I think that's what's going to set us apart from AI generally as well. Yeah. So I love that. Love that commentary.
Kent C. Dodds has an interesting take on that too, because he's like, AI is taking your jobs, but it's not the way that you think. It's they're controlling the interview process now.
So yeah.
That's the piece that you gotta
forget. Oh, I love that. I love that. I'm gonna have to go engage with that.
I'll send you the link if you're interested.
Yes, please do. Okay, so you tried Laravel and you went to Next.js. I am a PHP dev I haven't coded in a hot minute. And so I would love to dive into Laravel, the app that I was talking about where I want to like essentially create this AI agent, right, to allow folks to sort of tap into the insights I know. I wanted to build out my entire website structure in Laravel with modern JS like on the front end so that I could learn. And so like, as you were diving into Laravel, are there any sort of lessons or like, why did you go back to Next.js, if you don't mind me prying into that?
Yes. Okay. So I've kind of come to the realization as a full stack developer, there are two different ways you can approach a project. You can work from the back end to the front end, or you can work from the front end to the back end. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the way that I think, way that I work, and I don't know if that's just because my design background, but I think more front end to back end. And so that was kind of where I hit a wall with Laravel, is because you kind of want to build the database, the API first, and then move to the front end. So the part that I loved about it was the back end, because you can just hammer through stuff. They have all kinds of helpers and generators for creating factories and seed files and migrations and all the things. But then I really struggled. And so this is the other thing. I don't know whether I struggled because I didn't have the experience to get there yet. And it just would take time for me to be more comfortable with it. But moving from basically PHP to Blade, their templating language, to Livewire, which is kind of their dynamic RSC thing, to Alpine, using all four of those things together was just so hard. I don't know if I just couldn't wrap my head around that paradigm. I did have a breakthrough moment, again, going back to AI. I asked ChatGPT, I was like, I am a React developer trying to learn Alpine and Livewire. What are the paradigm shifts that I need to know that will help me understand the differences? And that was a breakthrough for me, because it was like, well, React is all state-based because you're just maintaining state and saving data. Alpine and Livewire are more event-based. So you'll fire off events, which is really how traditional JavaScript works. You fire off events and you listen for events. And it was like, oh, that unlocked something in my brain that I was like, I understand why this wasn't working. I was trying to save a state and you don't care about the state, you care about the event. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just things like that that are different. And I think, you know, as I was saying, it could just be time that you get, as you get more experience, you get more comfortable in it. But for build 12, I'm trying to move fast. And so I'm just trying to pick more boring tech, even though RSCs is kind of cutting edge, but pick boring tech that has a lot of support, has a large community, and kind of move forward with that.
Yeah. And I think too, with like moving fast, it's easier to stay sort of like, I don't want to say in your lane, but like stay with the tools and things that you're very comfortable with because you can move quicker there. That was like my thing with every, even like building my website has been such a nightmare. Cause I'm like, I just want something quick, you know, like I don't need anything fancy or complicated. It's just a marketing website. But my brain was like, okay, well, I know all these things. Like, how should I go build it? How should I go do it? And then I wanted to try something new. And it was like, I just went back to like what I knew, right? It was like, ended up back at Ghost because I'm like, I get Ghost. It's easy. It's simple. Yep. It's, you know, handlebar templating. So straightforward. Boom, you know? But I think the like developer or problem solver in us, right, wants to go out and start to pry and figure out and learn new tech. Cause like, that's what we love, but it doesn't always mean we're the most efficient with that new tech right off the bat.
Yep. And another interesting thing, and I grabbed all the numbers for this. I need to release it in a blog post. That was my intention, is the cost of these services. So with Layerable, a lot of this stuff is all bundled in. You get background jobs, you get, you know, different drivers for storage and email and things like that. But you do have to figure out hosting. It's a little bit different situation. I know that they have cloud. I'm not sure if that's released or it's coming, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. So you have to handle all that stuff. Whereas in the JavaScript ecosystem, a lot of times we're like, oh, it's free. It's free. At what point do you hit those limits? And because it is composable, it's like, okay, well, I'm pulling in Jest for jobs. I'm pulling in, I'm using Supabase for my database, my authentication and storage. So what does that look like? And then not only that, but it's like, okay, if I'm going to do this for 12 projects, what do the costs look like at 1 month versus 12 months when I have 12 projects, and how does that scale? So I did crunch the numbers on that to see what's the cheapest option. What is the cheapest tech stack that I can pull in? So that's interesting too.
Yeah, no, that is really interesting. Honestly, like, I think hosting is a whole thing. Like when people talk about that, and I understand, like, right, like Laravel, and you know, it's a little bit more complicated. And everyone's like, "Oh, the cloud," and I'm just like, "I don't like why the cloud? Like, why can't we like set up servers and like you know run our own infrastructure?" And but I think that's like you know sort of aging and dating myself, which I feel like you can probably relate to too. It's like early on, like you had to know DevOps, you had to know infrastructure, you had to know kind of everything to build something. And now we kind of run to like this answer of like the cloud and Kubernetes, and this is the way. And I'm just like, but it's really complicated. And if you're just building an app, like why is that the answer? Yeah. But that's a whole nother conversation, for probably a whole nother live stream, honestly. Okay. So we are nearing our end. Actually, we're like over the time that I booked. So I hope that you're still okay for another couple minutes to wrap up at least, but perfect. I would love to hear, this is like, we touched on sort of everything that, we really got to talk about. You said that you went to school for something. Did you say that you went for something different than like, programming and such? What did you end up going to, school for officially?
Ish. It's like all related Ish. Now. So
I love it.
I did get started in web development when I was 16. My first job ever was, I was updating a website through a CMS. So I knew like four HTML tags. I knew the paragraph tag, the break tag, bold tag, the italics tag, and a anchor link. And that's all I could do. I was just, you know, filling out forms in a CMS. And so then the next summer, I got a job working at the agency that had built the CMS. And so I show up. And they, because I mean, I kind of worked with them through support calls and things like that. So the first day, I get my very first ticket. And the ticket is to add an image to a website. And this is like back enough that you had more of that webmaster mentality where if you needed to update your website, you would email the company that you needed the update. So I just had to add an image. That was the That was a task. It's so simple, right? I couldn't figure out how to do it. I was like, I just know my five tags. I don't know how to add an image. And so anyways, most of the summer I just spent answering phone calls and trying to do what I could, but it was so boring. It was just answering phone calls. And there was a guy there that just kind of believed in me and the fact that I was 16 and hungry. And so he gave me a book probably about midway towards the end of the summer called, I don't even remember, what, HTML for Dummies or something. It wasn't the official book, but anyway, I something like blew through that book and I was just, oh, this is amazing. Like, I understand now how all this stuff fits together. I understand tables now, you know, all these other pieces. But a huge breakthrough for me was then I went back to school in the fall. So that was my senior year and they had a career shadow day. And so I went back to the agency that I'd worked at that summer. And the guy that had given me the book, I just sat at his desk right behind him and we built a website together. You know, I mentioned slicing and dicing where you get these images, you create tables and fireworks and all the things. But I watched him do it. I looked over his shoulder. And I think, you know, that's the value a lot of times with live streaming is you can see what somebody else's workflow is. You can see when they hit error messages, what those error messages mean and how they work through them. And so for me, there was something that just unlocked that day. So I came home and immediately just started hacking on my computer, designing a website that I could build out. And I ended up going back that next summer and I was a production artist that summer. Yes, I still answered the phone, but I was basically doing everything that my supervisor was doing. I was building websites for clients. I got to the point where clients would request for me to build their site or to make updates. And the amazing thing about this, and I just look at this and see, like, not everybody has this opportunity, but my heart was really design. That was kind of where I came from, what I wanted to be doing. And they knew that. And so while I was doing the work, the designers there would say, hey, these are the client projects that we're working on. Will you design a mock-up? And if it's good enough, we'll present it to the client. But if it's not, no harm, no foul. We're continuing to do our work, but you'll get a critique on it. And so I would design websites. I would sit in their critique meetings. They would tell me what worked and what didn't work with the site design. And not many got through to the client, but a few did. And it really just elevated my work. So I really got on the job training and just getting professional feedback as a, you know, 17 or 18 at the time. So just an amazing opportunity. Yeah. So when I went to college, I wanted to do animation. I really thought that I wanted to go work at Disney and do 3D animation stuff. So I picked a school that had kind of that program. I wanted to go to a university. I didn't want to go to an art school. And so the classes were very limited, but I took a lot of electives in art. I took several electives in computer science and took a few in web development. And what was funny is at that time, I knew more than my teachers did. And so it was a very strange experience sitting there when they're instructing and I'm sitting there thinking, that's not the way to do it now. Like, we're past that. And so I would help my fellow students with the things that they were struggling with. And so the great part about that was when I left the agency to go back to school, I had gotten to the point where I had done so much work over the summer that they had to hire somebody during the year to fill my spot. And they hired a girl that they were not crazy about. They didn't like her. So 6 months in, like, I came home for Christmas. I mean, I wasn't far away. It was like 45 minutes away. I came home at Christmas and they said, we're going to let this girl go. We want you to come back and basically remote work before it was a thing. Like, we'll let you work from campus during the year and you just come in and work on Fridays. And so that's what I did the rest of my college experience, was I continued to work with this company and gain experience and do design work and mock-ups and things like that. So just kind of doing this hybrid work from home, work from the office thing. So that was the start. And I loved web design and development. Even though at school I was learning video and animation and graphic, I still just wanted to stay in the web world. And the cool part about what I do now is a lot of that merged. So I have, you know, experience in editing videos. I have experience in graphics and motion graphics and all those things, but all those things can all live together where the web is right now.
Oh my gosh, that is so beautiful. Okay, so I chuckled a little bit when you were talking about knowing more than your instructors, because so one of my first jobs that I had outside of freelancing, so I taught myself how to code freelance for a while, did a lot of Joomla projects, a lot of like Drupal open source PHP type of stuff. And then got my first job. It was actually at a product company, oddly enough, in my like podunk small town area, which was like shocking that it happened. But when I interviewed for that job, we were talking about it and the CEO was asking me questions and he's like, so wait a minute, you wouldn't use tables to do this? And I was like, no, tables are like very old school. And so when I explained to him like how I felt about divs and like, you know, blah, 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 and like the erasure, like I got the job because I told him that tables were old school, like after the fact.
That's awesome.
And so it was awesome. But the funny thing was, is that that was in like, I don't even know what year that was, but let's just like fast forward. I think probably probably 3 years, if I had to guess. I enrolled in a software engineering program because I had dropped out of college two times at that point in time. First time was criminal justice. Second time was business management. And I'm just not a college person is what I realized. But I was like, I'm going to try this again. I want a degree. I want to prove that I have a degree. I want to prove that I have my skills. Got a contract job at a huge agency in Minneapolis, Space 150, if anyone's heard of it. And when I realized that, I was like, okay, I've clearly made it as a dev. I don't need to go to college. So I did end up dropping out. But in the class, that same exact thing happened. The professor was teaching building websites in tables. And I was literally like, why are we building websites and tables? This is the old school way to do things. And he was like, this is not the old school. And he like did not like my pushback. And so I'm like, this is not for me. I do not need to pay to have someone teach me how to do something in an archaic way. So I just laughed because tables really played in stupidly into my early career of like, yes, that was the beginning. But then as soon as we learned divs, it was like tables were out and it oddly played into my career quite a bit.
Yes. So. Yeah. Well, I feel like I'm mostly self-taught or on the job taught
because
where majority or at least the foundation of my knowledge is. But my degree is radio, TV, broadcasting. Very different. Well, not very different. It's still kind of adjacent. But, I think for people that are trying to decide, do I go to college, do I not? You know, some of it depends. Are you a college person or not? But the main thing at least that my dad always told me when I was going to school was you're learning to learn. And I think that's important regardless of what you're doing in tech. You have to be able to learn new technologies. You have to be able to pivot and stay up to date on everything that's changing.
Yep. Yep. I absolutely agree. I am the hands-on learner. You just throw me to the wolves and I like learn best under pressure. Where some people that is not, right? They need to have that sort of foundation before they get into that pressure state. Okay. 2 minutes left before we'll wrap up because I do have a hard stop at 11 my time. How do you get unstuck? This is one question I like to ask everyone. So if you are stuck on either code or maybe it's something else, I know you alluded to AI and that example, but what's sort of your mindset and tactics you like to take to get unstuck?
Yeah. So I would say there's kind of two things maybe. Let's see. My family gives me a hard time because I'm like, I always have 2 points. Whatever it is, there's always 2 points. Some of it I think is just going back to your workflow. So you were saying like, I am a hands-on person, throw me a problem, but you have a path that, you know, this works for me. This is how I learn things. And so when I'm designing something and I get stuck, I know this is the path that I have. I'll work on a mood board. I will, you know, go to other websites that I find inspirational. I'll start collecting things. I'll have that input and then use that as a filter. There's a process there that I've developed over time and how coding problems, you know, just take it one step at a time, break it down. I think that's one thing. And I think that's one thing that separates seniors from juniors is a senior person has enough experience that they know this is how I solve problems. This is my workflow.
Yeah, exactly.
The second thing, and I'm not as good at this, is walk away.
I'm not good at that problem. Either.
It's so hard because I just hit what I call, you know, the snooze button, the developer snooze button, where it's like, you just give me 5 more minutes. I'm almost there. 5 more
minutes. But yes.
There's been so many times where it's like, if I will just walk away when I come back, it's like, how in the world did I miss that problem? A semicolon or, you know, an uppercase letter. How long did I spend on that? But anyways, that's been huge for me is giving myself permission to walk away.
I love that. That has been honestly the most common answer. And I think that you are 100% right. I tend to do the snooze thing too. And I think that sometimes we just need to walk away, either go to bed because it's nighttime and you just have to walk away, or it's like, go do something else. rubber ducky where you explain it to someone else. That's like the tactic. I'll go to my husband and he knows nothing about technology or anything related to the field. He was in telecom. That's as close as he gets with fiber and networking. And I'll even just say it and he's like, okay, but did you know, like, and he'll just entertain my questions, but it's as I'm explaining it, it's like, boom, I got it. He's like, okay, bye. Good talk. Yes.
I love it. Fully
agree. Yeah, exactly. I love it too. Oh, this has been such a lovely conversation. We definitely need to, Arvin suggested that we do a live coding stream together. I think that would be really, really fun. My technical chops need to be sort of refined again. I'm diving back into like being more deep in the code. And so I think it would be really fun for us to do that. So if you're open for that, let's
do it.
I love it. Okay. Well, future event, we will live code together. Arvin will bring you in too. You are just such a good advocate for us. Amazing women in code and all the beautiful projects we're working on tonight.
And reach out to me, direct message me.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so on that note, before we wrap up quick, I know it's the 1 minute after, but final thing, where can folks find you so they can reach out to you, learn about all the projects you're building, learn about Redwood, all the cool stuff that you do?
Yeah, so I'm Self-Teach Me on most platforms. And if you go to build12.com, there's a newsletter there. So you'll see information about the project. You'll get information about each month's announcement, part-time startup, all the things.
I love that so much. I think I need to actually subscribe to that. So I will be over there subscribing soon.
Perfect.
Fabulous. Well, I will put all those places in the show notes so folks can find Amy. Thank you so much for spending a good chunk, an hour of your day with me. It has been absolutely amazing. And this conversation has been so great.
Awesome. Yeah, it's easy peasy.
I know, right? We just talk shop, which is like fun.
Yes.
I love it. Okay. Well, I hope everyone has a fabulous rest of their day. Tomorrow, my guest is Tejas. If anyone hasn't met Tejas Kumar, he is a lovely human being. Amazing human today, amazing human tomorrow, and pretty much amazing humans every single day. So I look forward to seeing everyone tomorrow. Reach out to Amy. Bye, folks. Have a great day. Awesome.